שלום לכולם, פרק נוסף של יאללה טו דה קלאוד, אנחנו בפרק 100, אבי, איך אתה מרגיש עם הפרק 100 שלנו?
פרק חגיגי, ברוכים הבאים, יש לנו גם אורח מיוחד היום, ג'ף בר, from AWS, maybe I will switch to English, maybe you heard the name, maybe you didn't, but I'm sure you read at least one blog post that he wrote, so it's a pleasure to have you here with us, Jeff, and today we are going to talk about how to enter to the cloud. It's part of the main subject of Yala to the Cloud. With us is also Boaz, our co-host. And
hi, everybody.
Hi.
I think let's start. Jeff, how are you?
I'm doing great. It's morning here in Seattle, and I had a little bit of a funny start to the day. I was actually planning to take a water taxi over to another place to work, and I walked down there this morning, and the water taxi actually wasn't running, so I had to come back home to Seattle. But despite that, I'm here and excited to be on Yala to the Cloud.
Nice.
We enjoy all the Legos behind you, so Ariel, this is especially for you.
Yeah.
I will upload mine when I will publish the episode. Let's start with the first question, Jeff. And again, being with us, when somebody asked me about cloud computing, and I said, "Do you know Jeff Barr?" And when he said me no or maybe, I said, "For me, Jeff is like Messi in the soccer world." So,
oh my,
wow. It's great to have you. It's really a pleasure. So we are living in, at least us, in the cloud computing world for a few years. And how do you see the cloud adoption? If something really changed when we have before 10 years and right now, what really, you know, a person need to do in order to enter to the cloud computing world?
Well, I'm really happy to be here. And one thing I've noticed with cloud adoption lately is that I'm starting to meet a generation of newcomers to the cloud that I'm actually having to explain the idea of on-premises and data centers. And given that most of us grew up in that time, and we all knew what it was like to have a bunch of servers in a closet or to have an entire data center and take some pride in that physical infrastructure, suddenly I'm having to tell people, well, imagine this big building and security and air conditioning and networks and racks. And they're like, oh, that sounds really interesting. What's that all about? So it seems like we're on this interesting time where the newest generation doesn't fully understand or maybe even appreciate what came before.
Literally born to the cloud.
Yeah,
exactly. So as far as adoption, I'm seeing really interesting things happening in the serverless world. I'm really fascinated by just how that entire concept is catching on. And people say, yes, we do grasp the idea of servers and instances, and they have their place. And we see containers and modularity. But a lot of my personal excitement lately has really been around the whole serverless model. And just when I do think back to my early days in my career and like being in college and having this gigantic mainframe that cost millions of dollars, and you'd make this, the school would make this big commitment for many years to own this mainframe. The idea that with serverless, you can buy milliseconds of compute time. I find that just fascinating that within the course of one career, we can see that much change.
Yeah.
Okay. Jeff, what would you recommend to those who have difficulties with starting with the cloud or figuring out how it works, or people that came from the on-prem world and they have a hard time to catch up with the idea or the topology of the cloud?
You know, I do realize that it's very easy to look at all of the breadth of services available in the cloud and say, there's just too much here, and I have no idea where to start, and I'm never going to catch up. I'll never know enough. And what I always tell people, I say, you need to just find one or two services, or maybe just a couple of features of a service, and say, let me just learn enough to get that very, very important initial success. So if I'm pointing them to storage and I'm pointing them to S3, I say, yes, there are thousands of pages of S3 documentation. Most of those you don't need to pay attention to get started. Learn about the idea of a bucket, learn the security model, learn about putting an object, listing a bucket, getting an object. So maybe three or four API calls, get that under control, build something useful, make sure you're good there, and then expand out with features or traditional services. But certainly don't think that you need to know something about everything before you can make any headway whatsoever.
Yeah. I just can share for my side. I am 46 right now. When I was I started my career, I was a developer. So I changed a lot. I was like a full stack developer before 20 years, and then I went to the database, and I was a DBA for first a DBA, but after that for a long time a system DBA. And when cloud computing started, you know, I said, okay, great, because there is a lot of playing around with the developer and the system, and it was great for me. And what I was really excited, and I wanted to understand everything. And I said, okay, cool down, start with the being like an architect, the solution architect course that I took, and that was the main to really, I think that the beginning should be understand what is cloud. Took really a few services to understand them well, because you cannot also today understand what or be expert around all the services that they are.
Exactly right. And to me, it's so important to when you're doing anything new, whether it's some software or a hobby or a sport, that small initial success that says you understand more than zero, you're on the right path, you've satisfied some initial requirement or desire, and you're like, okay, I get enough here to see what's going on, and to then at least appreciate, wow, there's just this vast universe in front of me of more to learn, but to say I now know more than zero, so I'm getting there.
Yeah, and I think it's very much related. So one of the most common mistakes people are doing are trying to learn too many things at once. And I'm just wondering, what other mistakes do you see people do when they try to get into cloud computing and maybe not only learning too much? I think this, for me, that makes a lot of sense to focus on something, probably something that is close to what you know from your own premise or previous experience. But do you see other mistakes people are doing when they trying to get into this new technology?
I think people should pay a lot of attention to the fact that the cloud is programmable and that there's APIs for effectively every feature of the cloud. And yes, there's interactive tools and there's consoles. Those are great for some experimentation, but you need to really think about the infrastructure as code model and say, I'll do a little bit of experimentation, figure out what I want with my interactive tools. Once I get it, I'm going to move to an infrastructure as code model as quickly as possible, make it really easy to set up all my infrastructure by running a template, running a script. I think that model, and instead of thinking, well, I've carefully pieced together all these different things with a lot of pointing and clicking and typing, I'm not quite sure what I have set up, but it's working. Just better to very, very early on say, let me very, very explicitly design my infrastructure and put it together and to prove out that repeatability very, very early in your process. It's easy to say, let me build it and then I'll move to a template-based model later. But starting early with that is one of the things I think is worthwhile. The other is also pay attention to security from the beginning. There's certainly a lot you need to learn in order to feel very, very comfortable with security, but don't flip that around and say, I'll just leave everything wide open because it's just my own little app and I'll come back later and tighten it up. A little investment up front about learning the security models, learning how you regulate access, and then very carefully just enabling access as you need it is a far better model than saying, I don't quite get it, but nobody's looking, so I'll just tighten it up later. There's a lot of regrettable situations.
Always somebody looking.
Yeah.
Okay. Avi, you see a lot of mistakes. What are the mistakes that you see here in Israel?
Sometimes people that migrate from on-prem, they try to deploy the same idea of on-prem in the cloud. And it's a bit different because you have availability zones and you have built-in load balancers and some other services. Sometimes they try to avoid vendor locking or using or log themselves to S3, so they work with Mini IO or services like that. so they can multiply their environment to other clouds, but they work only with AWS, and they will continue to work only with AWS for the next 2 years. There's so many stuff that you see, and you see this sometimes and you say, why didn't you ask before? Like, it's broken. It's not going to work. It's not going to scale. So this happens a lot, and this is part of my job. This is what I do. I help people to utilize the cloud in a better way. But I have another question, and it's not directly to Jeff. All of you can reply. Let's say I'm a DevOps, SRE, sysadmin, and I have like 3 or 4 years of experience with AWS. How do you keep up the pace? It's like, from the moment we started the call, AWS probably launched 2 or 3 more features. So how do you keep up with all the...
Jeff was here. He was not writing the blog post. So
how do you keep up with all the new releases? And I can share in a minute that after every reInvent, I have 16 hours of flight back to Israel. So I open a lot of tabs in my browser. And for the first four hours, I read all the tabs and then I close it. And after 4 hours, I read again all the tabs in the default. And that's my way. So how do you keep yourself up to date?
Jeff, please.
Well, I think that you have to be very careful about defining what up to date really means. I think that if we were to try to say, well, the universe of things I care about in the cloud is all the services and all the features. I don't know that anybody's brain is actually big enough to deal with that. I know mine certainly isn't. So I would say that you need to practice some just-in-time learning, where you're generally aware of the power and the capabilities of each service. And then as you embark on a new architecture, building a new system, you go back and you always refresh yourself, and you have to make sure that, you know, when we're talking about like network packets and DNS, we have this concept of a TTL, a time to live. I think we have to have a time to live associated with all of the learning that we do around cloud services, because the very traditional model where you learn something and the language, the system, the environment is just unchanged for years and half decades at a time. That is just not the case. So we have to have this decay model or this refresh model as part of our learning that says, I very explicitly acknowledge that a lot of what I know is maybe a little bit outdated, but perhaps on the more incomplete, and say, before I do something new, I just need to refresh myself. What are the newest Lambda developments or the newest DynamoDB developments or whatever your topic is or your service? Just make sure that you are not proceeding based on an old interpretation of a service.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can share my experience. So when I started at AWS a bit more than 5 years ago, there were around 50 services, I think a bit less. Today, there are more than 200. And somebody told me very early in my career at AWS that you should probably define yourself like black holes that you're not touching or not getting close to them because you're going to be sucked in, and focus on what you need or what you feel comfortable with. So I try to divide between services that I just need to know about, and I try to read every internal email coming with a new announcement, and we have a lot of them. And for those that are close to my day-to-day or to a project I'm working currently, I'm diving deep and trying to understand the small bits and bytes to make sure I can use them. So, for example, everything new that is being released around serverless or specifically on Lambda, and I very much agree with Jeff that this is one of the most exciting technologies of cloud computing, and I use it a lot. I would try every new feature on my own to see how I can use it to my other projects or to have a cool demo with it. And unfortunately, analytics, I would read maybe the first few lines just to get a better understanding what this new feature is all about. But there is a very good chance I won't touch them anytime unless I need to do a very specific token analytics, and even then I will try to find somebody else that will do that. It's simply impossible. I don't think that you can even put yourself to yourself a target that you need to know everything. I think it's
exactly. So I've been experimenting with this idea I call ambient information, where I like to be, while I'm sitting here at my desk, I like to be aware of what else is happening in the world. And so a few weeks ago, I mounted, in addition to my regular full screen monitor here, I have another monitor mounted up above, up on the wall. And so I'm running this awesome piece of software that's called Magic Mirror. And on the Magic Mirror, I've got the date, I've got the time, but in the middle, I actually have this big column that's the AWS news feed from the What's New. And so I can just look at that with just a glance, and I can hit the button here on my Stream Deck, and I can see that just this morning, we announced a new feature for AWS cost categories. They now support resource and tag-based access controls. I'm literally just looking up in the air, and these facts are just floating above me. So that's one of my neat tricks for keeping up.
Great.
Now, RSS feeds.
Yeah, I need to buy some stuff now. One important thing that happened here in Israel, Jeff, in the last year was the public tender Nimbus. It was called Nimbus, and we see a lot of enterprises, government, and big companies trying to start adopting cloud. When I was again in the Minister of Finance before 5 or 6 years, they told me, "Yeah, in 2 years we will all in the cloud." So they like
to say that.
What I really understood, it was the difficulties of big companies, of enterprises, or even government, with all the issues with data and governance, etc. So what can you tell us a little bit before? I know that the US and also maybe the UK are a little bit before Israel adopting cloud. What can you advise to these big companies, to the people that are leading these organizations, how to adopt cloud in such of big companies?
Well, I think it's really important to look at the flexibility that you get and say there's so many different kinds of flexibility. You mentioned, for example, Nimbus and the fact that we've got AWS regions in so many different locations around the world. And that's we talk to customers and they say, well, I want to do my storage, I want to do my compute, I want to do my analytics, I want to do that in some specific area of the world. The fact that we keep adding additional regions to AWS is something that companies look at and they say, okay, I'm a company based in Tel Aviv and I want to think about addressing customers in Latin America. I want to address customers in the United States, for example. Being able to pick and choose regions and being able to have that control over this is where my data is stored, this is where I do all my processing really addresses just a kind of an early cloud misconception. It used to be that people would hear cloud and they would think, well, I put something in the cloud and I suddenly lose control of where it is. That's never been true. And it's absolutely not true today. And then, so that location flexibility, I think, is really important. And then thinking about not just the fact that you can scale and that you can get more compute power, less compute power, more storage, less storage, but thinking that in terms of what different kinds of businesses could you do if you can get as much compute as you need or as little compute as you need. So, you know, in the kind of to me, what we, I think all of us think of is like the old days. You'd have to make a fixed commitment and say, I need this many servers and I've got this much compute power and this much memory and this much storage. And then you'd really just have to adjust your application to fit into those constraints. But today's model is the opposite way around, where you should really invent your application, use as much or as little of all those resources as you think you need, and then let the cloud just expand or contract your resources in order to fit your application. So really inverting the application to infrastructure constraint side and saying, let's let the application decide what resources it needs.
And Mo, maybe you are talking, I think, with a lot of people here. What do you feel? What do you see?
Yeah, so I think that we need to acknowledge that it's slightly different set of challenges that enterprises and especially public sector customers have. And we were talking earlier about startups, about those born to the cloud that they are not thinking about data centers and they probably never went to one or enjoyed being freezing inside a data center for several hours. This is my memories. So enterprises and the public sector customers have slightly different challenges. They have a lot of legacy. They have infrastructure. They have data centers, and they need to look at this from a slightly different perspective. I fully agree that they see the value in a very early stage. They understand the value of flexibility, the value of having a very robust system. They can scale in no time. They can change it. They can try and experiment, which is super important to them. Some of them already to see the value of security. We heard some very interesting story from several public sector customers in Israel regarding the capabilities of security in the cloud, like protecting your assets with WAF and other services that used to be a huge bottleneck. They required the experts that in many cases those organizations don't have. And they starting their journey. And I think what I hear a lot and what I recommend a lot to those customers is to get help in terms of training, in terms of working with our partners, using Avi and Do It and other partners, of course, to help them to build the systems the right way. Many of them are thinking to start like a basic lift and shift, just replicate whatever they're doing. I think Avi mentioned that. I'll do whatever I've been doing with my data center. I'll just do it in the cloud. That's maybe okay for a very short-term solution, but I think that building it the right way, using the technologies that cloud provide, can really, really help them. And we see this work already happening. Nimbus was announced, I think, like 6 months ago, maybe a bit more. I don't remember. You remember the exact dates.
Yeah.
But we see a huge shift there and a huge interest. Yesterday, we had an event with a lot of public sector customers in Jerusalem.
I only got pictures.
I know the marketing manager. I'll talk to her. So I think it's very exciting times. If most of my work, most of the people I was meeting at the beginning of my career at AWS were startups and technology companies. So there are a lot of large technology companies in Israel. I see more and more enterprise, SMBs, public sector customers that are really coming and looking for information to learn and to get better and know what they're up to in the next months and years.
One thing that I can advise is to, I try to establish a CCOE, Cloud Center of Excellence. Also, we are working with the Bank of Israel, the Minister of Finance, and some IDF units. And I think that some companies, public sectors doesn't understand the need of building a cloud center of excellence, and I think that people should companies should do it more. It's a great thing to establish in organizations.
Agreed. Every company that I've worked with that has put the energy into saying who are our early adopters, who are those that are leading the way, that understand the cloud and who can not just adopt it first, but make some nice on-ramps for the rest of the organization and put a nice wrapper around that and call it the Cloud Center of Excellence. They've really done I'd say, the best at not just the learning part, which is important, but the actual adoption and deployment into production.
Yeah. I am like to be strict, so I met Boaz before 5 years. I don't remember, and also Rafael. I don't know if you remember Boaz, and he told me CCOE. I went learn. Okay, this is the best thing. Let's start doing that. So, if AWS advised, you should do it. I think at least this.
Yeah, I think the Minister of Finance is a very good example for that.
Yeah, yeah.
With a lot of buy-in from leadership, of course, that's super important as well, but I think it's a good example.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's absolutely essential to have that leadership buy-in. And then I've also seen that leadership will make very aggressive statements about closing down data centers. When they stop talking about, well, it's a 3 to 5 year thing, and they start talking about, well, it's this many months or this many quarters, that lights a fire under people and they say, oh, that's a very short time frame. I can see that far into the future. I'd better actually start really working to figure out my migration plan to the cloud.
Yeah. Avi, we talk about enterprises. You didn't talk now. Avi doesn't like enterprises too much.
Yeah, it's a lot of paperwork. And I came back to Israel this morning from a conference in Germany. For plenty of on-premise companies, and Seagate were there, Western Digital were there. So yeah, I had the pleasure to remind myself why I don't like enterprises. One last thing, Jeff. I believe you have a global view on the use and adoption of AWS services. Do you see any trends in the adoption of, of different services?
I don't have a way to really kind of put together like a matrix that says this part of the world is more into ML and this part is into databases and containers and serverless. But it's, if anything interesting has happened over the last 2 years, is that there's been a bit of a leveling where people all over the world are no longer thinking, well, there's a few tech centers that I need to flock to in order to build a career and to be successful in tech and in the cloud. People are saying, wherever I happen to be, I'm going to figure out a way to get some connectivity, to figure out where I can learn and to build something, do something, and to succeed and grow.
Okay.
Boaz, in Israel, do you see some services that are more, you get more questions?
Containers in general are a huge topic. I think Avi would agree with me. That's definitely something that we see with a lot of companies from all, by the way, all segments. We see containers in banks and, of course, in startups. Machine learning, obviously, super popular, super important. Every organization I'm talking to, every organization is trying to figure out how to get the advantage of machine learning into the organization, how to turn this data they've been collecting for years and been lying around, and maybe some very basic BI and queries were running on it, and create like real gold out of it. I think those are the top two. Always like storage compute is always there. But if you're looking for trends, for what people are talking about, for popularity, I would put those two. Serverless is another one. I'm sure there are others, but I hear a lot about those technologies.
Okay. Jeff, maybe last words for you to the Israeli, for Yala to the cloud. We are more DevOps and crazy people. Something from you to us.
Say again? I didn't quite get
I said that we in Yala to the cloud are more, you know, DevOps and community podcast. So maybe just a few words from you to close this episode.
Community is so important. Community is one of the really amazing things that grows up around successful technologies. And the interesting thing, I think, is every technology provider wants to have a community. And it's such a delicate thing to construct, because you certainly want to do what you can as the provider to organize a bit of a community and encourage it to grow, but you have to be a very, very sensitive and really, really say, let's let that community take on a life of its own. I'm a very big believer in things like tech user groups and meetups and wonderful places to get together, to learn, to find that you're not the only person that's brand new and trying to get your head around something that's really interesting and compelling, but perhaps a bit complicated. What wonderful way just to, you meet those people, do a bit of networking, maybe find your first job, your next job. So, and then you might find yourself actually not just taking from the community, but also being able to contribute back to it. And I think that's a really important aspect of community, that giving back side.
Yeah. I can share that I started Israel Cloud again before 5 years because I understood how difficult it will be to adopt. And now we have Israel Cloud, we have Spain Cloud, Germany Cloud, Latam Cloud. So all the idea of connecting people and sharing knowledge. And I had the luck to build two companies around that. And when you give, when you share your knowledge, you get it back. So I can say from my part of side that Boaz, we are not working as money, okay? There is no money. There is only community. And he's really a great partner of Israel Clouds. And I think that a big success of the position of AWS here in Israel is because of his personality, the impact that he's not trying to sell, only to share knowledge. So I can say from the 100th episode of Yala to the Cloud, thank you very much, Boaz, for all your support.
See you in the next 100.
Yeah, Jeff. Also, I hope that we will have you on the in the 200 episode.
Sounds good. I will look forward to it. Congrats on reaching 100. That's a really awesome accomplishment. So really happy to have been able to speak with you all.
Great. Thank you. Thank you very much, everyone. And until the next one, תודה רבה לכולם. עד הפרק הבא. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.